Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414.
We're poor, Ashe. Ashe.
We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Porto, Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here, buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with the Dinka symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr,
Porter Griffin, Thomas
Lee Jr.,
Evelyn Glover,
Frank Wilburn.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Ray,
John Henry Clark, John Dr. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Jesus can't feel. are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anthi, Brother Kwasi Craft, and Brother Kwojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Good morning and good afternoon to our listening audience and to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. We are about to have a wonderful conversation that deals with disparities in our community. And we have two guests, Davry Blackwell and Fred Roy. Davry Blackwell is the executive director of and co-founder of the African American Breastfeeding Network, and Fred Royal Jr. has served as president of the NAACP in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We've had these disparities for a while. We've been talking about disparities for a while, and tonight we plan to look at some solutions to those disparities. And we have also a co-host, one of our co-hosts, Dr. Janine James, is an expert in the area of infant mortality and Black mothers and Black babies' health and well-being. And she will also be chiming in as an expert in the area as we seek to find solutions. And at this time, we have Sister Anthi, who will share with us the purpose of Sankofa.
Good evening, Baba Kwojo. It's good to join you this evening. The purpose of Sankofa organization is to use African principles of unity and cooperation to create a healing environment in our community. And I'd like to follow that up with our ancestral profile. Our ancestral profile for this evening is Dr. Effie O'Neill Ellis was an American pediatrician, a child medical care consultant, and an advocate for infant health and maternal education. Ellis was born June 15, 1913, in Hawkinsville, Georgia, to Joseph P. O'Neill and Althea Hamilton O'Neill. In 1933, she obtained her bachelor's degree in biology and chemistry upon graduating from Spelman College. Ellis then attended graduate school at Atlanta University, where she acquired a master's degree in biology in 1935, where she graduated with honors and fifth in her class. Following graduation, following graduate school, she was presented with a grant to study diseases and parasites in Puerto Rico, which promoted her passion for healthcare for all socioeconomic backgrounds. Ellis served as a pediatric residency at Massachusetts General Hospital from 1951 to 1952. Her primary concerns were with the black community, children, and child mortality rate. She aided in the development of parenting and education programs for the March of Dimes. She dedicated much of her treating and advising to new and expecting mothers. Ellis obtained a postdoctoral fellowship studying pediatric cardiology at Johns Hopkins University of Medicine from July 1, 1952 to July 30, 1953. She was a specialist in maternal prenatal, postnatal, and preventative health care. Her team helped to develop the technique to help save blue babies, those infants with inadequate oxygen supply. In 1970, Ellis became the first African-American woman to hold an executive position in the American Medical Association, which she held for 5 years. She became the director of maternal care and health care for Ohio's Department of Health in 1960. In 1970, Ellis was appointed to the President's Committee on the Handicapped. Ellis was induced in the Chicago Women's Hall of Fame in 1989 for her efforts in improving the lives of the black community and helping to lower infant mortality rates. Ellis was married to Arthur E. Ellis in 1935 and later married James D. Solomon on March 23, 1953. She died in Northwestern Memorial Hospital on July 5, 1994. Effie O'Neill Ellis. An awesome example of dedication to the birth of our nation, the black mothers and their babies, which is our future. May she rest in peace. Ashe?
Ashe?
Along with wanting to give recognition as well, Dr. James is an obstetrician gynecologist who I believe Effie O'Neill Ellis was a mentor, and she was able to work closely along the lines of her lines of work. And as our host this evening, I'd like to give some background for Dr. James, who is an obstetrician, gynecologist, and is a subspecialist in maternal fetal medicine, high risk pregnancy. She was recruited by the University of Wisconsin Medical School because of her training in taking care of women with complications of pregnancy. It was her desire to remain in Chicago after completing her training to help improve pregnancy outcomes in Chicago. However, she could not find a job in Chicago. Local obstetrician Dr. William Finlayson and the late Dr. Philip Hamilton, a health risk pregnancy specialist, quickly briefed her on issues facing women's health in Milwaukee. They encouraged her to serve on the board of various community organizations that were dealing with teen pregnancies. While a member of the faculty of the medical school, she was asked to serve as the director of obstetrics for Mount Sinai Hospital, the Milwaukee clinical campus of the University of Wisconsin Medical School. She very quickly learned that she would have no cooperation from the new chairman after Dr. Hamilton relocated to Philadelphia to chair Temple University Department of OBGYN. The new chairman set the policies set the policies for patient care and began to systematically direct the policies of the department by bypassing its director of obstetrics. Dr. James, in 1985, director of safety, Dr. James. In 1985, Dr. James began to notice that black pregnant women and their babies were not doing well. While we were told that women who were less educated and poor had inadequate access to medical care or smoked or otherwise had poor health practices. However, Dr. James noticed even black women who were well educated with good careers and were personally responsible were experiencing bad things happening in their pregnancy. During this time, Dr. James lost her first pregnancy and delivered 6 weeks early her next pregnancy. We're not immune from the plight of other black women. She began looking at what modifications were necessary to improve the outcome of pregnancies of black patients. Despite her patients having improved outcomes, no one was interested in her findings and recommendations for management. In fact, her care was criticized and she was discouraged from providing the care that attempted to address the safety of mothers and their babies. She received much pressure to conform to the practices that were not helpful for black women. Dr. James left the faculty and opened her own independent practice. It was a grueling responsibility, but it was worth it to see the mothers and their babies doing well. It is a toll on her family life, and she temporarily closed her private practice. She went to work for Milwaukee Health Services, a federally qualified health center. These clinics are funded by the government to provide quality health care for those who have experienced medical complications or who are at risk of poor outcomes. She subsequently worked for many programs that provided pregnancy. Dr. James began to notice a financial disparity of what services and resources are utilized where black women receive care. They're receiving care without sufficient health professional to meet their needs. They report they feel disrespected by those who are taking care of them. They're not adequately assessed to ensure that they're safe. Dr. James has offered her services to Milwaukee Health Services, Outreach Community Health Center, and the Medical College of Wisconsin, and the Milwaukee Health Department. She expressed her willingness to participate in the development of management guidelines that have been ineffective in improving health outcomes for the pregnancies of black mothers. That is the bio of our co-host this evening, Dr. James, and her efforts at looking at this disparity that we're dealing with this evening. Back to you, Dr. Brother Folger. As we move forward in the program, we would like to remind our listening audience and others that are on our lines to be sure that you mute your phones because we can't hear your background unless you're speaking.
Thank you for reminding us because I had actually muted myself and that I was on mute. So thank you for that prompt. I really appreciate it. You know, like I'm saying, but you didn't hear me when I said it. There's so many disparities we could deal with, especially here in our community. I was just looking at disparities like healthcare, education, incarceration, black family, economics. You know, we go to the list. And tonight, you know, we're joined with two distinguished guests, Bob and Fred Royal, former president of the Milwaukee chapter NAACP, and Daphne Blackwell, executive director and co-founder of the African American Breastfeeding Network. So tonight we're going to focus on the healthcare field. We could, like, and this is part two of our discussion. We had a podcast a few weeks ago, and we talked about disparities, systemic, you know, and structural racial discrimination that impact not only Milwaukee but other cities across the nation. And so we're coming back and we're going to revisit disparities and we're going to focus on solutions. So can't wait to get back into that conversation. Sister Auntie, did you have anything to say? Email us a question or comment.
I failed to give our email address. Anyone that has a comment or a question, please email us at sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com during the broadcast or anytime after the broadcast. We would love to hear from you. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And at this time, I'm going to introduce our guest. And we have Delvery Blackwell, who's the executive director and co-founder of the African American Breastfeeding Network. She is an international board-certified lactation consultant and holds a bachelor's degree in journalism and communication. The AABN was established a decade ago to improve the maternal child health and champion breastfeeding. The organization is committed to advancing system and policy changes, partnering with allies and implementing community-based, family-centered, culturally tailored education and support services. Through Dalvery's leadership and vision, the AABN has built eminent goodwill in the community. The organization has been recognized and highlighted in local, state, and national media and reports, most notably the April 2015 Since magazine, 10 Things People Are Talking About, January 2015 Associated Press, 2014 the CDC Breastfeeding Report Card, and the 2014 Black Child Development Institute in Milwaukee report, Being Black is Not a Risk Factor, Statistics and Strengths-Based Solutions. This year, the organization won a national competition for breastfeeding innovation issued by the Office of Women's Health. She has been instrumental in creating and building the AABN's core program, Community Breastfeed Gathering, which is seen as a national model. Delvery's alliances with community and institutions has coined her champion for family-centered health. She is the recipient of the 2021 Wisconsin Public Health Association Award Excellence in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention. She received the 2017 Woman of Commitment Award from the Wisconsin Alliance for Women Health. Dalvery was Milwaukee Community Journal's 2018 Year of the Child, a Game Changer honoree. And our other guest, Fred Royal Jr., has been active community advocacy throughout his career. Currently, he's the vice president of the NAACP Milwaukee chapter branch. Fred served as president of the NAACP for 6 years and has also served on a range of boards from Milwaukee Area Technical College to Social Development Commission. In 2011, he was elected to the American Civil Liberties Union and the Social Development Commission, served on the board of directors for Rotary Club of Milwaukee also. Second generation born in Milwaukee, Fred went to Our Avenue School, I know that school, and then Garden Homes Elementary, and in high school attended Ruth King, my alma mater as well, in 1975 to join the United States Air Force. Milwaukee Area Technical College hasn't been a stranger to Fred either. In 1990, he received his Associate of Applied Science degree in Paralegal Studies, and then continued at Cardinal Stretch University, graduating in 2007 with a bachelor's degree in political science, one of my favorite subjects. He currently is a member of, a member service coordinator for the Center for Self-Sufficiency. Previously, he served as manager of Youth Services Center of Self-Sufficiency, worked 6 years in workforce development at Deploy Milwaukee. Fred started out his career in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, at Delphi Electronics and Safety, assembling electronic automotive parts. During his 26 years of service at General Motors subsidiary, from which he retired, Fred was elected as vice president of the United Auto Workers Union, Local 438, which got him started in his career path toward public service, community activism, and politics. I guess that degree in political science paid off. All right. Dr. James is asking solutions to preventing the death of black men and babies. She's very, very passionate about that. And forward to him chiming into this discussion with his conversation, because we're going to try to get underneath the reasons why we have these disparities. Right before we get started, Sister Auntie, do you have a sponsor to Okay, why don't we hold on to the sponsor later? And why don't we get Calvary? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm present.
Great, great. Well, you know, this healthcare disparity, this specifically infant mortality, is an area where you are well versed, especially in the area of breastfeeding. Can you tell us why breastfeeding is so important?
Well, breastfeeding is biologically the best way to care for our babies and infants, and physiologically as well. It provides all the nutrition a newborn needs at birth through the first several years of life. So it is, we consider it the first food and the best nutrition for babies. It just has everything, every mineral, nutrition, you know, all the the fats, all the ingredients that a baby needs to survive and to be healthy. We know that breastfeeding reduces ear infection. It reduces respiratory infections. It also reduces the possibility of infants developing type 2 diabetes and becoming overweight. There's a lot of benefits that we don't talk about of a mother's milk or breastfeeding for mothers as well. It helps mothers cope better with postpartum depression, for example. It saves the family thousands of dollars a year in supplementation. It also reduces ovarian cancer and different types of cancers for the mom. So there's a benefit for the mom, there's benefit for the infant, and there's benefit for the environment as well. And when we talk to Black men, what they appreciate about mother's milk is that the number one thing is the bonding between the family. It's not just the bonding between the mom and the baby, but it's the bonding between the family members, including fathers as well, because they get to see firsthand how that connection happens and what that transfer of emotion feels like with the family. So fathers are pivotal in the work that we're doing in maternal infant health. I do want to preference this conversation by saying, you know, we've been dealing with health disparities and inequalities of health for over 400 years. And unfortunately, the death of George Floyd and others, as well as technology, has magnified this issue and has allowed us to document the injustices for the whole world to see instantly. So now we have a new frame and a new lens to see the inequalities around maternal and infant health. I think tonight that we should be focusing on not only infant mortality, but also maternal mortality. We know that the health of a community is definitely determined by the health status of mothers. And we know that maternal mortality and morbidity in Wisconsin is escalating, as is infant mortality. But Black women are 5 times more likely to die than white women from complications due to pregnancy. And usually these complications are related to cardiovascular and chronic medical problems. So I just want to make reference to the conversation on maternal and infant mortality.
Together, they're inextricably intertwined.
There's a lot of background noise, so if we can ask everybody to mute themselves.
Yeah, that's much better.
That's much better. Thank you. Sorry, what was the question?
The connection between mother and child. Talk about one without talking about the other.
Sorry, I didn't hear the question. For some reason, I'm still getting a little background noise.
I think it might have.
Can you just speak a little louder? What was your question?
Well, I was what you said about you can't have one without the other. When you talk about the mother's health and the baby's health, they are inextricably intertwined.
Right, and what we should be concerned with is, I think that unfortunately Wisconsin, like many states across the United States in America, have totally lost control over how we're addressing infant mortality and reducing the rates of infant mortality. And if we're not careful, we also are going to lose the fight to decrease Black maternal mortality. And Dr. James has recommended several recommendations. And the one that really hits home with me, all of them do, for sure, the education and certification of medical providers who care for our Black moms. There needs to be specific curriculum and courses geared towards caring for BIPOC communities and Black families and birthing people, but also the home visitation piece. Upon discharge, every mother should have a visit by a medical provider in her home to make sure that, as Dr. James said, that she's emotionally well and physically well. And it's not until you go into the home and you see what the environment is and you get to sit down with her in the comfort of her home to ask questions on how she's doing and how baby is doing and how the five, you know, the other family members.
Yeah, that sounds like very important to do. Maybe it's not even enough right now. And before we get that a little more deeper, I'd like to bring Fred Royal into the conversation. How many people have been dealing with disparities over the years? And I'm sure, and I know actually, that the NAACP has been also doing work, on the very talent. But Fred.
Peace and blessings, family.
Systemic.
So if we start talking about systemic racism on all levels, there's a great read called The Color of Law by Richard Rothstein that starts off by talking about the disparities in housing, but goes into all facets, whether it's employment, how African-American communities are policed, to education, to commerce, home loans, the application of the GI Bill. Very good read to give you a historical reference of how government and private industries collaborated to ensure that minorities, BIPOC communities were marginalized. When we talk about the issue of systemic racism in medicine, a good read is The Racial Divide in American Medicine, Black Physicians and the Struggle for Justice in Healthcare, authored by Richard D. DeShebo. It gives one of the most complete chronological histories of how the medical industry has ensured or even, I could say, that used our people in predatory practices to ensure that we were marginalized. One of the comments that was made about the Dr. Ellis and stated that there was no disparities in poor or wealthy pregnant mothers, which I think was highlighted when Serena Williams gave birth to a child and almost died in her postpartum treatment due to the lack of empathy from the medical practitioners, which is also highlighted in why the opioid epidemic didn't impact the Black community as much as or as great as it did the white community, because the medical, the sentiment within doctors is the Black people can stand more pain. So when we talk about solutions to infant mortality, I think the pandemic has raised a very promising avenue with doulas. We have at the City of Milwaukee's Health Department partnered with local doulas, which has been proven to be very beneficial in making those connections that were just referenced about the bonding between someone to give caring information to a mother or mother-to-be. And it's critical to have that pre and post delivery of the child. And then also, I don't know, I'm old enough to remember when Lady Pitts was around, right?
And I remember.
We focus a lot on male mentoring, and we we've fallen behind on female mentoring. We no longer have home ed in schools, and we see a direct correlation when we don't pour into our mothers, who are the cradle of our civilization. We see young women walking around with bath attire, you know, they're coming out with pajamas and shower caps with slippers. Totally unacceptable when I grew up. So some of the solutions, I think, are doulas and mentoring to our mothers to be.
I just wanted to acknowledge that doula assisted births is something that the BIPOC community has been doing for decades. And honestly, the pandemic, the medical professions, it wasn't until the pandemic that the medical professions realized that doulas and birth workers are here to stay, and that there's nothing that they can really do about it. There's not, you know, doulas work on behalf of birthing people, on behalf of pregnant families. They do not work on behalf of the medical system, and that is why that model works. I also want to say that I agree with you 100% about doulas and doula assisted births. My organization, we have a community model of birth workers. Our program is called We Rise Community Doula Program, and we use this the lens of Kwanzaa principle, collective work and responsibility, meaning that we work collectively to look at the issue and to resolve the issue as a people, and not feel that territorial around addressing maternal and infant health. That is all of our problems, that this problem is all of our problems, and that we need to work collectively. We work with 15 community-based doulas. There's also the Harambe Doula Project in Madison, Wisconsin. And then this week, I was told that there's another doula organization in the community that works with Latinx and the Native American population. So the beauty of where we are right now, and it has everything to do with the pandemic in terms of the healthcare system realizing that they need Black birth workers and BIPOC birth workers in this space, because they're overworked and extended, and so they need women to come into the hospital system to support birthing people. It's a team effort. National organizations recognize doulas as part of the team providers in healthcare settings. So our role as community leaders is to make sure and to ensure that we can protect the practice of doulas. We don't want it to become medicalized.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. But I don't want to just protect the practice. I want to expand the practice. Because I think if we wait on the medical community to come around and fully embrace BIPOC communities as they do the European community, we'll be waiting for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, yeah.
It's important that we control their narrative and that we control the resources and how we're framing birth workers in this space. We don't want medical systems to develop
right
a dual system for us. You know what I mean?
Right.
We don't want them
there's,
to say, oh,
there's certifications.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't need their certification or regulation.
Right, they're training, exactly.
Once the licensing and regulations come in, we'll have even more disparity.
Yes.
That's when they quite often make sure that doulas that look like the BIPOC community are excluded from that process. We saw that when we went to the child care provider, the gold standard, that there was one agency that did the regulation for all child care providers, and most of the mom and pop child care providers were pushed out.
about. What's the difference between a pizza and a midwife? Many years ago, I remember, actually, I was delivered by a midwife in 1948. But I don't hear the word midwife as much. And doulas is kind of new to me, too.
Yeah, doulas are birth assistant, labor and birth assistant experts. The main difference is that they are not licensed or trained in any medical procedures, and they cannot authorize medication. But they play a very important part role in prenatal education and support, preparing the mom to birth in a hospital setting or at home or freestanding health center. And they play an even more important role during the birth and labor. So they're considered professional and experts. They're trained in childbirth education. They're trained in comfort measures. They're trained in cultural nuances in different ethnic groups. They have various training. So the main difference is that they cannot prescribe medications, and that's really the main difference. And they cannot recommend a particular procedure during birth or even before or after. In our community, what we learned is that many people don't understand the difference between a midwife and a doula. The doula doesn't replace the midwife. She supports the midwife. We need midwives. And the other thing I want to say is that there is a resurgence of across the country of Black midwives, particularly professional midwives. Professional midwives primarily are certified for and trained to do home birthing, whereas certified midwives do hospital births. And we need to distinguish between the two, because there is a resurgence in a presence of home birth midwives in the country. We don't have enough Black midwives, I would say, particularly in Milwaukee. We do not.
Brother,
what about doulas?
Brother Charles, you are nearing the top of the hour.
Yes. Sister Ante, do you want to pay the bill for us?
I think her...
I'm
sorry.
I didn't hear what you said.
I think it's time for a sponsor.
Oh, of course. Let's talk about our sponsor. Our sponsor is EDOC Advice. EDOC Advice is a website created to provide a place to go to get answers for your health or medical concerns. Are you wanting more options than you feel you're getting? Let EDOC Advice help you to problem solve. Go to their website and ask your question. Their experienced professionals will help you to obtain the help you need that makes sense to you at www.edocadvice.com. They do not replace your health professional or provide you care, but they can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. They network with other professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. That's EDOC Advice, www.edocadvice.com. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sister Ann. Now we're at the top of our hour, and Dr. James hasn't chimed in yet, but as soon as we get past the
she
top
is
of
a-
the hour...
She's having equipment problems, so she may not be on today.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for letting me know. But we are at the top of the hour, so at this time, we're going to have a brief station break.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414.
Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anki, Brother Kwasi Clare, and Brother Kwojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at Sankofa Council MKE@gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE@gmail.com.
Now, I don't think that Dr. James is even back yet. But at this time, we would normally entertain call-ins. Anybody in the listening audience who may have a question or comment to make would please feel free to do so.
All of your callers are part of the panel.
Okay. Thank you. So going back to the discussion that we had earlier, we were distinguishing midwives, doulas, and it looks like doulas would be a key if you're talking about having the community take responsibility for the before, as opposed to waiting on one community to come in and save us. So it looks like doulas don't have to be licensed, not regulated, and they fulfill the role for our mothers and our infants.
Well, Charles, you're 100% right on that. The only thing is that they have to be, or they need to be funded. So if we're looking at a policy solution, we need to be ensuring that either our community block grant dollars some are set aside to ensure that doula's work is supported. And on a national level, we should be looking for our representatives to insert some funding and some type of health care provisions in which those dollars can be directed to doula's.
I agree 100%. I first want to reference that doulas and birth workers, I don't think, are the solution to maternal and infant mortality. The model itself is not designed to eliminate disparities around birth, infant mortality, maternal mortality, but it does improve the quality of life for the pregnant and birthing mom and her child. But it's systemic racism, as the other speakers so eloquently spoke about at the beginning of the hour, that we need to tackle and make sure that it's addressed within maternal infant health. Also, I wanted to mention that absolutely, I had a doula my first birth, and then my second birth, I had a home birth. So I'm using those lived experiences in the lens to talk about the work. Doulas, their work, in my opinion, is priceless. If you think about it, in our program, for example, in the ReRise Community Doula Program, our doulas meet their clients early first trimester to develop that relationship. So they have a relationship with the mom and developing that relationship the first trimester when she finds out that she's pregnant. And they are also required to stay at the birth for the length of the birth as long as mom invites her to stay. And just imagine, a birth can be 20 hours long. Wow. Right? Birth could be 25 hours long. Our doulas are required to stay there and to support the mom during the labor and birth. And they are also required to stay 2 hours after birth. And on top of that, right now, our program funds doulas for 2 months postpartum. Legislation should include 12 months postpartum support for women after delivery. But also, I want to say another need is legislation to fund and policy changes. I also want a preference to say we need to do a national cost analysis of doula-assisted births. Because right now, there's no document, there's no evidence that we have, that no organization has produced that shows the BIPOC community, and particularly, what does it cost to recruit women of color, to train women of color, to support women of color, and then to provide adequate, excellent services prenatally, postpartum, and during birth. We don't have a cost analysis. So that's where my organization, we're working with several different organizations throughout the country. We're starting with using a database called Maternity Neighborhood to collect data so that at some point we can do a cost analysis to show legislators and Medicaid and insurance companies and HMOs what does it really cost to implement this model at the community level.
Yeah, I love the idea. You have pre-birth care, post-birth care, and then postpartum support as well. And that's something I think back in the olden days that grandmothers and great-grandmothers, they were doing probably in the village. And
yes.
Now it looks like the village is kind of dissipated. The village is a little broken right now. It's fragmented. And it looks like this doula concept would be one way to bring that village back together.
The village really never left, in my opinion, over the last 400 years. It never, unfortunately, our medical system attempts to suppress Black midwives as well as birth workers. And they did successfully, but now there is a resurgence of midwifery practice in the communities of color and Native Americans and indigenous communities and the Latinx community as well. So I believe if we can look across the country, even in our own state, we will see some promising work being done.
So the village never really left. The village just needs some support. The village.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, as was talked about before, we need the funding. The funding is really important. And so Medicaid doesn't cover doula births, unfortunately, in the state of Wisconsin. We know that New Jersey is looking at a possibility of how to integrate doula services and prenatal care mm-hmm. coordination in Medicaid coverage.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying about the cost-benefit analysis. If we had some statistics to show how getting the help up front you know, the pre-birth and postpartum support in the long run would be safe, and it would help create a better quality of life for the mother and child.
Yeah, I do. I think we need to present the argument of why we need to reimburse doulas at an equitable cost. We pay our doulas $1,200. If you ask me what would I pay them, I would pay them between $3,000 and $5,000 per birth. But many health funding partners will balk at that cost, and they really don't have a clear idea of data that shows the impact that doulas make in improving, not resolving, right, but improving maternal and infant health. So we're working at it, and I'm just glad that we're at this point finally. I think it's the pandemic changed maternity care practices. So all of the healthcare systems, because preventing COVID-19 was their first priority, and rightfully so, they changed the maternity care practices to initially exclude the doula, to exclude the mom's partner, but quickly realized that by March of when the pandemic hit in March, right, by August in Milwaukee County, I know we talked to the healthcare systems, and they all agreed that they need doulas in the space, because doulas truly help them, help the healthcare system create safety for the mom and a better birth outcome. So they finally realize it.
And let's be clear, they weren't willing to come into those communities because they didn't feel safe. And the doulas were, because they're part of the community.
Yes. Amen. And they still don't. Unfortunately, we have a healthcare system. I'm not going to name the healthcare system, but it's really all of them. I got a call this week. All of them. It was very astonishing to me that one of the healthcare systems called me and asked me, do we do home visits? When the pandemic happened, our home visitation didn't decrease, it increased. Because doulas are essential, they're part of the healthcare team. And so home visitation during pregnancy is important, but this healthcare system actually asked me if we do home visitations, and if we would do home visitation after mom gives birth. And I had to ask this organization, do they do prenatal care coordination? Because prenatal care coordination includes home visitation. My organization decided a long time ago that we were not going to be a prenatal care or a prenatal care coordinating authorized agency. So we do not provide PNCC. There's many organizations that are doing that very well. And so we partner with those organizations. And as we learned recently through the investigative reporting, there's many, many PNCC providers that are scamming the system. But
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it was a wake-up call for me, because what it allowed me to do is to look internally so that we can create checks and balances. Because any doula, any PNCC coordinator, anyone can go into a data system and put any information that they want in there, right? They can say that they did a home visitation and showed mom how to do different positionings for birth or whatever. So we're looking at, my organization is looking at, how can we create checks and balances to ensure quality of work is being done.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if how receptive are Black mothers to welcome doulas into their home? Do they have to develop a kind of relationship first? I'm just wondering, you know, that's a very private, intimate kind of a thing to be giving birth, and to invite someone into your home could be a little daunting, I think.
For some mothers, it is. Very few. Many of them are open to the home visitation because if it's their second baby, they have already been exposed to some type of home visitation program, whether it's through WIC or the health department or other organizations. But if you really, if we step back for a moment and look at the environment of the pandemic in which we are all experiencing together at the same time, now is the time to meet families in the comforts of their home. Now is the time to provide those services that families need in their homes and to do the home visitation, right? So actually the pandemic escalated and justified home visitation.
Now, do white women
stress? Women want the home visitation. They desire that sisterhood. It's almost like their doula is like their sister friend. She's a very intimate team in her health care because she, first of all, she comes from the community. She looks like the community. She lives in the community. That's why I advocate for a community-based doula model versus other trainings that are happening across the country. BIPOC communities Absolutely. Work better when the model is community-based, meaning that we hire women, we train women, we recruit women, we support women who live in the community. And we do that in breastfeeding support, too.
And that is one of the things that Dr. James offered as well, the support of the doula as a solution to the deaths of Black mothers and their babies. She provided a list of solutions that I would like to put forth, and if you don't mind, I would read these on her behalf since she's having computer problems. I would like to say, first of all, she's offering solutions that much of the challenges that Black women face during their pregnancies. However, most do not notice there's a problem. Most health professionals assume that the problems that arise are not preventable. In Dr. James' review of her patient records to see that most of the complications are preventable. Another issue is that patients need to learn that there is greater risk for them. Patients who learn they are pregnant should begin evaluation of their pregnancies immediately. Often patients learn that their pregnancies during an emergency visit. They're advised to make an appointment for prenatal care. Often it takes 2 to 4 weeks or more to start patients in a pregnancy and past history assessment, ultrasound, vitamins, assessment of mental health. Social support should be made available to them during emergency department visits. If pregnancy tests are offered, lab tests and ultrasound and vitamins should be made available and a follow-up visit within a week to review the results of those tests. Another resolution is pregnancy provider of all persons who provide obstetrical care training is essential. That has been developed by the National Medical Association is critical so that patients feel that their concerns are taken seriously. An assessment at their risk based on past history of medical conditions, prior conditions of pregnancy to include premature birth. I'm sorry. Assessment of blood pressure, looking for abnormalities when they're not pregnant. What are their work requirements and are they doing well in those settings? Those who deliver prematurely need to have more resources available to ensure babies' needs are met, especially for the first year of life. Is the baby growing well? Assess the mother by the Milwaukee Health Department for blood pressure and depression when she brings the baby in for its visits and vaccinations. Assess their work and social situation. some funding has become available to continue to allow for continued medical care for a year after the baby, after the birth of their babies. Supporting doula services are available to families that include settings available that make breastfeeding possible. 24/7 availability of pregnancy care, as women may not be able to get in for medical services during regular business hours. A physician must be a part of the pregnancy team providing pregnancy care. Literal referral to maternal fetal medicine specialists for recommendations for pregnancy management. Women who develop preeclampsia must be seen by a cardiologist so that they may be evaluated for cardiorectal and other heart conditions that often become a health problem. And then nursing and physical staff are often judgmental of patients. This can become apparent as they look for reasons to quickly discharge the patients from the hospital or office and minimizing the seriousness of their concerns. Black people do not like coming to the hospital. They're not generally neurotic and would not be there generally unless they do not feel well. A home visit within a few days of a discharge is important to ensure the mother is doing well emotionally and physically. Is she adjusting in the addition of the baby and her social structure? Mid-level providers are generally a great addition to the team, but they need to be trained to recognize and to look for signs and symptoms that are potentially unsafe for the mothers or the baby. This is not generally the focus of their training. They assume most patients are normal and all will be normal for the mother and the baby. And as a follow-up question to that, with the solution that is being suggested by Dr. James, what is the AACP doing to make these solutions offered here and with the others that's been offered necessary?
So if you ask what the NAACP is doing to bring equity in health care, we ask for the diversity makeup of all health care providers in the Milwaukee area, of their board of directors, upper management, and mid-management. And collective five health care providers gave us an aggregate number of all five of their organizations' demographic makeup, which they knew was horrible. Shortly after that, the Wisconsin Medical College hired five minorities in key positions. The one in particular was the diversity officer. And we had some very lengthy conversations about the medical college's true commitment to diversity. And she felt that in the beginning, she could make a difference. And they were going through a strategic planning process, and I asked her, if they do not have intentionality in hiring percentages of X amount of minorities over a certain period of years or a certain specific period of time, you know that they're giving you lip service. And she came back and told me that that was something that was left out of strategic plan. So it's hard to break into, and even with the president of the college being an advocate for higher diversity, he hits a wall that most folks don't realize. Our liberal white friends start getting ostracized when they start to try to make change too rapidly, because their board of trustees still holds a lot of clout. Board of trustees across all the medical colleges or all the medical institutions are predominantly white and predominantly male. So, yeah, we've asked for these and we've pushed for these, but we've, as with most systemic change, racial change, we come into brick walls. And even though we have almost more black representation in political office right now than we did in Reconstruction, because folks become accustomed to their lifestyle, they don't want to risk their chances of getting reelected either. So it's a challenge. But we're still fighting the fight.
There's a lack of advocacy here. Sounds like, you know, that's a blatant missing, the lack of advocacy here. What does the diversity officer look like, Fred?
Most diversity officers are people of color. And that's telling in itself right there, because the racism isn't a black issue. It isn't a people of color issue. We're not in control of the racist practices. It's the European Americans that are. It's the European Americans that are the gatekeepers into the transfer of power to bring about equity in these systems. But they're always checking the box by putting a person of color as that diversity officer.
I'd like to add to the conversation by saying that one of the issues in the big elephant in the room is about you know, money and making sure that white America can continue to capitalize off of a broken healthcare system on the disparities of black and brown people. In September of 2020, the Associated Press published an article, a very popular article, that alluded to through a study that black infants survive when they have black doctors.
Wow.
And I think that the pipeline to support more diversity in healthcare systems is important, but there's a factor in the big elephant in the room, and white people know this. When you expand diversity and have a pipeline of brown and black people becoming physicians and OBGYNs and mental health therapy, what you are going to evidently have, which is already here, black folk want to be cared for by black folk. That's the reality that we're dealing with. I can't tell you the number of times that women called me and asked me for a black pediatrician. They called me to ask me for a black OBGYN. They called me to ask for a black doula.
Yeah. You know, that makes
a
lot of
sense. That's the big elephant in the room.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, we don't want people who don't live in our community coming in to police us either. We don't want people who live in Waukesha or somewhere else coming in to occupy. I mean, that's what it occurs like. We're under occupation. We need to be providing those services for ourselves, and when we do, we will be much better off.
And we used to do those things. Just imagine what it would feel like to have healthcare center run by BIPOC communities throughout the community on every block. As many churches as we have as many healthcare centers, or we have pharmacists, or we have, and we don't see those things. And we used to, you know, and because of racism, we no longer have those. But we can create this change that we need.
I don't think that racism eliminated Lady Pitts, or racism eliminated the rise in doulas. I think that there is definitely a change in the community. When we said that the community isn't broken, I'm a second generation Milwaukeean. And when the acting mayor, Chevy Johnson, and the ex-alderman, Donovan, came out as the top two contenders for the mayoral position, there was a posting on Facebook that if Donovan won, we'd go back 50 years in the city of Milwaukee. I'm old enough to know that 50 years ago in the city of Milwaukee, we had the highest median income for African Americans in the United States, which gave us access to health care because most of those jobs had health benefits.
They had benefits.
We had one of the highest home ownerships in the city of Milwaukee across the nation. So, like I said, when we had more capital, it wasn't free. You sent your daughter to Lady Pitts. There was a cost associated with that. But I think now that we've had 40 years of poverty in this city, it has impacted a lot of the services that were provided by folks, homogeneous services that were fee for service based, that we can no longer afford. Many people in the city can no longer afford, and the government hasn't stepped up and replaced that funding.
So it looks like the solution is the multi-dimensional solution, and it's going to take the community taking responsibility for what's missing.
I think it's going to take advocacy for one. We have to know what we want. We can't go in a candy store and say, I don't know what I want. We have to be specific in our ask. And as was alluded to, that cost analysis, whenever you talk about dollars, people want to know what's the benefit. What's the cost, you know, cost-benefit ratio, right? So that needs to be done. And then we need to hold our elected officials accountable. Like I said, we've got 7 black elected officials downtown, 2 Hispanic. That's 9 votes that can override, and if we get our first black mayor, it's veto-proof. Hopefully, we'll have an advocate in the mayor's office. That these funds cannot start being allocated and directed towards the services that we need to move beyond this poverty that we've been dealing with for over 40 years in our community.
When you speak of advocacy, are you referring to legislative advocacy, or should we be advocating in other ways? I'm sorry, Dabra, you had something to say too, but
when we talk about local advocacy, we don't have to have policy changes from the state legislature. We need our common council and our mayor to direct city budget dollars towards services that will have a positive impact on reducing these negative indices that we've been reading about from Mark Levine for the past 40 years.
With the politicians, with the Buy Back Better program, I'm sure there's some help that is coming. Is there anything within those types of packages that needs to be brought to the forefront with the advocacy to ensure that if there's any dollars in there for that we'll be able to
You're absolutely right. Those Buy Back Better dollars were earmarked for certain projects, but then there was still discretionary money. We just saw the city accept something like $1.9 million to increase law enforcement. So, you know, are we just going to hire more law enforcement to do the same type of policing that's been done that's cost the city over $32 million in the last 15 years? Or are we going to do something different in reimagining public safety? So when we talk about the money to replace lead laterals, are we going to allocate funds to black plumbing businesses to ensure that wealth can be spread, or to local businesses versus dividend that money out to American plumbing, who came in here with pistols on their hips because they were scared to work in the neighborhoods with swastikas on their coolers. So it's all on how.
Oh no, I was just wanting to, you know, you sparked my emotions when you spoke about hiring black and brown licensed plumbers and other people to replace the laterals, which I agree with 100%. And in doing so, we also have to give the resources and the funding to those organizations so that they can get up to speed in developing the tools and the expertise to do that, because they have been systematically X'd out of those type of trades and not provided the opportunity, in addition to the funding, but also resources so that they can learn the things that they need to.
Absolutely. It's called a protege mentoring process, where a bigger company brings on a smaller company to build capacity within that smaller company. You're absolutely right.
Yep, that's very, yeah, it's part of systemic racism and the historical, trauma and racism that we all experience in America, and being, for the trades particularly, black and brown people have been locked out of it. So they haven't gained those skills and the expertise, but that's in philanthropy too, for small community-based organizations like mine, who have been excluded from access to resources.
100% agree with that. And see, my whole premise and lift off, you know, the saying that all boats rise by a lifting tide, right? So even though Americans may have to share some of the wealth that they've been reaping off of the misery of our community for the last 40 years, crime will reduce, gun violence will reduce, infant mortality will reduce, education attainment will increase, net black male incarceration will reduce. So there's some economic benefits, that cost analysis that you were talking about. Right now, we spend more money on incarcerating an individual, that individual could get a Harvard education for the amount of money it costs to incarcerate an individual. So when we talk about the cost analysis, yeah, so your European Americans are going to have to share some of the wealth, but then you ain't going to have to worry about going down at Third Street and getting shot at. So, you know, it's a cost analysis, it's cost benefit.
While it's disparities that we're dealing with, we have to recognize as well that the money that is being used is our money. We do pay taxes. We pay taxes when you go to the store. Anything that
Amen.
We own, we have paid taxes on it. You can't own anything legally without paying taxes. Period.
Amen.
I don't care if you sleep on the street. If he buys a candy bar, that person buys a candy bar or whatever, he's paying 5 cents more for taxes. So we got the disparities, the bad part, but there's the good part that we are providing as well, and that is our money. We are providing our money.
That's our money in that budget, right?
Thank you. Yes. And so we were talking, I wanted to know, was there dollars towards as well the health area? What monies is coming in that direction as well?
Or what percentage? I think the police is getting what, close to 50% of the city's budget.
Is a little larger than that.
It's larger than that.
I think it's closer to 64% of the property tax revenue. Absolutely. But when you talk about dollars for health, with the last administration pushing back so hard on the American Health Care Act, those dollars haven't been replenished, right, at the rate that they should be, especially when we talk about Medicaid and Medicare. So, I don't know what this current administration has taken so long on reallocating those funding at the levels they were prior to the disaster we had in the last 4 years in the presidency. But yeah, there needs to be some advocacy on a federal level to ensure that not only that those dollars for Medicaid and Medicare, but even for our CHIPS program for our children. I think it was something like 82,000 children that were kicked off of CHIPS over the last 4 years.
Brother Charles, you got a caller.
All right. Welcome, caller.
Okay, 334-414.
Can you let her in?
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. I tuned in late, so I'm just listening. Thank you for picking my call.
Okay.
You're right on time. You're right on time.
Mm-hmm. And then you have...
this is Dr. James.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Oh, my goodness. I have been listening to such a wonderful conversation. And we have offered some solutions. Won't solve all the questions, but certainly the medical pieces are items that I have worked with since coming to Milwaukee in 1985. And what was presented to you earlier was a list of the blatant efforts to avoid doing what is necessary to help solve this problem from a medical standpoint. And I've been waiting for somebody else to come up with the solution in the medical community, and it just has not been a priority. Although many of these organizations that are have been created to address the problem are getting dollars to do so, and really nothing is accomplished. Something very simple, as Delvery presented, that we have the data that says that black babies, from a health standpoint, do better when they have a black pediatrician. So recruit some black pediatricians. That's not that hard to do that. To recruit some black obstetricians. We had more when I first came to town, and I came enthusiastic about that which I would be able to do, and I've been blocked in all ways except in the sanctity of my own private office. But when we had to leave and go out into the hospital, that's when people were canceling my orders. It's deliberate. And so as I listen to Mr. Royal speak about the things that the meetings that they have had with, like, the Medical College of Wisconsin, if you don't have at the table people who know the score, that know what's going on, then a show, a dog and pony show, can be presented to you.
Amen.
And so I'm not aware of, and maybe there are and they're just not revealing it, but I don't know who the members are of the Cream City Medical Society who sat in on any of these discussions. You
Dr.
have
Renee?
Me living here. You have me living here, paying taxes since 1985, who has all the credentials. There's nobody in the country who has any more credentials than I do to address the medical management. And to not ask me, to not have me involved in it, is simply disrespectful. And it is as disrespectful as we are treated when we attempt to get medical care. And so the monies, when you talk about the monies being available, organizations like Milwaukee Health Services, like Outreach Community Health Center, are receiving millions of dollars to provide care, quality care, they say, for us, which includes the hiring of doctors, the hiring of nurses. But there is a small number of doctors in those settings that are black, or nurses even, that are in those settings that are black. And I think that's a simple enough place to insist. Recruit some black doctors. Recruit some black nurses to come into Milwaukee and us continue to do all the things that we've spoken about, the breastfeeding, the doulas, the employment issues, all of that are important. But these are not impossible settings and situations. And when the money is there and you refuse to use the money, I mean, I couldn't volunteer to do what I do. I just was in New Jersey for 2 months taking care of Afghan refugees with the same kinds of medical problems that we have in Milwaukee. Now, it was important enough to bring people who are as highly trained as I am, loads of midwives, loads of nurses, to meet the needs of those Afghan refugees. We did it in a tent, but we did it nonetheless. So what that showed me, that if you could do it in a tent for Afghan refugees who don't speak English, you have to use a translator, but have all the same medical problems, why can't you do the same thing in Milwaukee? So the public needs to know it, and that's what we're talking about here today. Those of you who've been at the table, that's wonderful. I'm glad you had Dr. Cecil Robinson. That's wonderful. And Dr. Cecil Robinson is a wonderful, very capable physician. But she is not an obstetrician gynecologist. So why are we walking around it? I think that she was maybe the only person that they could get to come in, that was invited to come in. But come on now, let's be serious. To not have, you have even Dr. Finlayson. Now, he's up there, but he can sure talk and can address all the babies that he's taken care of in this city and done so in a very competent manner.
Yeah, but the discussions that we were hosting with the medical providers was broader than just infant mortality. It was about the whole system, because of their 16% GDP in the state of Wisconsin, and knowing that because of the baby boomers, that medical care, especially geriatric medical care, is going to be on the rise. And there was always been an affront to discontinue the 2-year nursing program at MATC, which is the greatest avenue for minorities to get into healthcare. So we were fighting the battle to increase presence of African Americans within that field, within that arena of healthcare in its totality.
What about taking the pool of, you know, these women who are doing CNN, and a lot of them I hear that, you know, they can readily get a license to provide those kinds of nursing services. What about focusing on some of those CNN people and, you know, support them to go to the next level in the healthcare field?
Dr. Levy, who was the dean of nursing at MATC when I was on the board of directors, and also when we was trying to fight for her to get a position at Wisconsin Medical College for this new grant that they had, has always been an advocate to ensure that the nursing program, the healthcare program at MATC stayed intact. There was actually legislation in Madison being crafted to eliminate two-year nursing programs, even though four-year nursing students from other colleges like UW, Cardinal Stretch, Marquette would take transferable credits from MATC to fulfill their requirements back at their respective colleges because of the cost. So white folks are always trying to eliminate our access to high quality paying jobs, and it's a constant fight.
In a couple of minutes, we're going to have to close out. We may have to come back for part three, you guys.
There is, before we close out, there is the Black Maternal Symposium happening the week of Doula Awareness Week. The symposium is March 26th. And my organization is having a press conference to highlight the community-based doula work that we're doing. And our doulas are going to do a presentation and demonstration, not part of the press conference, but just something after the press conference that they're doing. And also I want to, maybe we can come back to this conversation during Black Maternal Health Week, which is April the 11th, I think, through the 17th.
Thank you for that information. That sounds like a wonderful idea to have a press conference to get the word out. Because we need to get the word out, sounds like, because we need to have support for doulas. We need to increase professionals in the healthcare field in general. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. I was just wondering, is there some kind of coalition, like an advocacy coalition, that includes like a multi-disciplinary approach to attacking these kinds of disparities? Do you have something like that, like a coalition of advocates?
Yeah, I can't think of anything that comes to my mind.
That might work. Anyway, we're out of time. It's 7:54, and it's time for us to shut the doors. But I'd like to thank the Black Talk Radio Network, including all of those people working behind the scenes, like Dr. William Rogers and his production crew and staff, for their technical contributions to produce this broadcast, and also the Sankofa Council for support of this program and for the sharing their vision for unity following an Afrocentric approach, Afrocentric principles, and helping us to learn and use those principles in our lives, getting back to the village. And so we need to look forward to bringing you more programs that we hope you will enjoy. So at this time, we're going to say good night, stay safe, the Sankofa family and all of you. Till next time, your host, Baba Kwame Robinson.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. Changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh. listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. They don't have so very long judgment day, so won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Change it, yeah, just you and me. Change it, yeah, change it. Go alone. Need a little help. Say it for some help.